Hey, Chris.
Hey.
Hey. So in software, when you're developing software and you're going through your security procedures, you have something called threat modeling. And this is the idea that perhaps you put out a piece of software and you know that there are hackers and you know that there are individuals who are going to try to break into that software, especially if you are a producer like Google or Microsoft. And the question of today's podcast is, why aren't designers or product owners doing this? And this was inspired by the last few weeks of events or few months of events with the Twitter hacks, the Zoom hacks and sort of Zoom bombing situations. Facebook is thinking about pulling political ads because of disinformation. Now Twitter and Facebook are going after QAnon sites for disinformation. So all of these are after the fact. And no one's actually thinking about, when you produce a piece of software from a user experience point of view, what happens if things go wrong? So Chris, yeah.
Yeah. It seems that what happens if things go wrong, you take 2 days to write a shitty press release to tell everybody what they already know through good reporting.
Well, you're doing a lot of apology tours, right? You're instead of really thinking through the situation beforehand, you're apologizing after the work. And to me, I think it's really going to be important looking forward when you have design, user experience, and product ownership to think about how people are going to use these types of platforms or sites or products or applications that you are creating to do negative things. I think we've gone past the point that we can assume that everybody's good and we live in a wonderful Disney movie. Rather, instead, we know that as soon as we put something out, you know, especially if it is high use, people are going to leverage it to attack, or people are going to leverage it to do something maleficent. Can I say that word? That's a Disney movie. I just tied that back. I'm done.
I'm not sure if that's a real word or just a Disney movie.
Whatever. It's a word now. It's
What I'm mostly bothered by is that there seems to be almost no response from design, except how do you guys say that? After the calf has drowned, they close the pit. That's a Dutch saying.
After the calf has drowned, you close the pit.
Yeah.
We can just say after the fact.
What? Yes, but basically the design response to this is to try and fix it to not happen again. But what is the design response to the apology tour or the way you show these kind of more permanent marks? Right now, the response is just delete whatever happened and don't talk about it again.
Well, and you're not really fixing the problem, right? And this is something that I see not only with designers, because I try to keep up, whether it's New York Times or whether it's articles on Medium where people are complaining about what's happening with Zoom or Twitter or Facebook. Rarely, rarely, rarely do people ever offer solutions. They just say, this needs to be solved.
Why?
So... I know nobody sees us on video, but Hoos just fell over in his chair, or like, I don't know what happened, but we're trying to have a serious conversation and you just crashed down in the chair and you tried to keep a straight face, but it did not work. What happened there?
Yeah, that was intentional. I'm trying to get the mic above my breathing. So I was like, I need to put my chair lower. I can do it while Joe is talking.
Coming back to that, nobody offers solutions, right? People are like, well, yes, Facebook needs to solve this, or Twitter needs to solve this. And you don't offer solutions, number one, because after the fact, solutions are pretty hard to come up with because it's usually restricting functionality that already exists. So you are restricting things that have already been put out there and put in place. So people who are using it are going to be disappointed or annoyed that, you know, their fair use or their good use is being restricted. But Hoos, you brought up something before we went on the air that I thought was good, which was, there are companies that think about these things.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if anybody has ever seen sites like this, but there are companies that have sort of big public responsibilities. And in this case, I'm talking about an airline. They had us design something called a black site or a dark site, or what would you call it?
Yeah, either one. Yeah, it was black site, dark site. We rotated between those.
And it's basically a prepared web page for worst case scenarios that can happen to an airline. Like, what if an airplane has gone down? What if there's a natural disaster? And they pretty much have partial press releases or at least templates ready to really quickly respond to these things to make sure that when people come to their website after this has happened, they will find relevant information in a tone that is in, let's say, an emotional tone with what happened. They're ready. They've basically figured out what happens if we crash this car right now. How do we talk about that happening? Like, they're ready.
Ironically, when we designed it, we never, you know, we're designing it thinking, you know, okay, how often do planes crash? And about, I would say, 3 months after we designed it, unfortunately, the only accident I know in this airline's history happened. A plane crashed and they had to use the site. And you really see the impact that that has on people, right? When, I mean, you have people who are terrified about their loved ones and they need to get information. And so when you can flip over to something like this to provide people with information quickly, and Chus, as you said, in an empathetic manner, that makes a huge difference. But companies right now who are putting out consumer products and are not in more regulated industries like trains or planes or, you know, automobiles, I'm picking a lot of transportation in this case, you know, I'm sure food companies probably have some sort of site like this in case there is a recall on food. But yeah, you have consumer products that don't think about this. So as you are a designer or as you are a product owner, I would encourage these disciplines to start thinking, how do you model this? I'm actually surprised there's not a company who does this type of work exclusively from a user experience point of view, or maybe there is and I don't know about it in my limited searching.
Do you want to talk about your Google Drive barfing on itself as well?
Yeah, I thought that was a good one. So I, you know, I've had my Google email address, which is, this directly goes to why we need these situations. So my Google email address is quite generic. I got it extremely early on and I get a ton of spam. And a lot of, well, not a lot of that, but sometimes that spam can be in the form of pornography. But Google Mail links directly to my Google Drive. And so what Google Drive does is when somebody shares an attachment with me in email, it throws that up as recently shared attachments and shows me a thumbnail of it. So if I go to my Google Drive, I, from time to time, about once a month, see porn just popping up in my Google Drive. And I'm thinking, what the hell is going on here? And then I figure it out that, oh, I got an email that had an attachment that had, you know, whatever, how God knows if it's, you know, a virus, since sometimes they're Word documents or other things that probably have macros in them. I don't know. I never opened them. But yeah, that's a great example of where somebody didn't really think through what can happen when people use this in a less than positive intent.
Yeah. And I love how, even though that was an email and it goes into your spam filter, like there's a catching mechanism there that makes sure that when you open up your email at work, people won't see it. That's awesome. But then it leaks out into your Google Drive, which you also use at work. So it's, yep, like one person designed what to do with that, and he didn't talk to the other person that works on the other side where that information goes. It's just not a complete response.
I'm not saying that designers and all these people or whoever, the product teams, have to go, you know, for months and model these things. But at some point, sit down and run a few what-if scenarios. What if people try to attack this in some way from a user experience point of view, not necessarily from a security point of view? What happens if people try to attack others on this platform or on this app? What would happen? How can this app be used to galvanize individuals towards a, you know, negative response? I'm trying to think of the word that I'm looking for here. But yeah, it's more of just simply sitting down and asking what if, and how do you actually then apply those potential outcomes, or how do you protect or safeguard against those potential outcomes?
I actually think in this case, I would like to propose something to all the proponents of sort of personalization through algorithms. I think it would be very interesting to use whatever technologies available, either sort of hard coding an algorithm or machine learning. But why can't we have personas? Why can't my computer see that I might do different things in my private time than I do during my work time? We need to use YouTube for work all the time, but how do I need to take care of what I watch on YouTube at home versus what shows up when I open it at work? And I know there are personas in there and you can flip that on and off, but there's all kinds of automations now, and I have no idea why we as users end up being the ones that manually need to curate this all the time, because all of these automations just don't take care of the fact that you are not one person and you are not of one set of mind.
Well, thinking of that persona issue, we always design personas for people who are, again, using the software in positive, proactive ways, or who are using the software based on the intent that we created. Be interesting to say there's a persona of somebody who is, you know, like, here's your 8chan user, right? What's that person going to do to your software if they can get a hold of it? And then all of a sudden, you know, it's a very different world out there. So, Chus, time to wrap up, man.
Yep.
Catch up with you soon.
Bye.
Bye. It is interesting, just to the point of I love the press release fact, because it is so much just apologizing for everything instead of just taking responsibility at the beginning.
Yeah, and especially with the culture of now sort of people taking the fall for things. Yeah, like the CEO was responsible for all of this. How the hell is it okay if somebody leaves the company? That doesn't change shit for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big thing. And I've been keeping up with articles on gaming and like the abuse that happens on Twitch a lot of times towards female users, right? And you have people leave the company, but it's like, that's not going to help. It's there are fundamental safeguards that need to be put in place in order to start to make a difference, number one. Number two, there needs to be a fundamental culture shift on how people are using this platform, or just in general. Then there's the bigger question of how do we teach people not to be assholes? And I don't know that one.
Yeah, you can't teach people not to be assholes. But what I think is important is that everybody stresses the fact that when you make a mistake, you can learn from it. And these companies seem to fire everybody who made a mistake. So nobody will ever learn, because you put a fresh person that hasn't made a mistake yet there every time. Like, how's that ever going to work? How's that person that was burnt by a mistake going to help while he's sitting at home, and a new person who wasn't burnt by that mistake is like, whew, I'm happy I didn't make that mistake, going to prevent that happening the next time? Just, I think there's an inherent importance in keeping people on.
But that's how you do your great big apology cake, right? Is you're like, somebody has to take the fall for it. Somebody has to be the scapegoat. And then everyone's like, oh, okay, they took it seriously. They fired somebody. It's like, no, you didn't. Person probably got an exit package too if they're an executive.
Taking it seriously is coming out with a solution for something not happening again. It has nothing to do with the person who was in charge. It's not the military.
Well, this was one of the good points with, you know, when Twitter banned political ads. People were like, thank God, Twitter, like, you did the right thing. Facebook, why don't you do the right thing? And I remember somebody made a good comment about this. Like, the amount of revenue that Twitter makes on political ads is basically zero, or it's close to zero for the bottom line. So you can be principled when there's no money involved. Yeah. Right, like Facebook makes hundreds of millions off political ads. And so, yeah, it comes down to the monetary aspects of being a publicly traded company and doing the right thing, especially when it gets so U.S. focused. Right? And you have, was it Unilever? I want to say it was Unilever in the U.S. stopped, boycotted ads on Facebook until they started to handle the situation of Trump disinformation, except the fact that everywhere else in the world, except the US, Unilever was still running ads. And so it's like, are you really taking it seriously, or are you just doing a show for PR? And I think most of the time it's the latter.
But I think your quote sums it up, all of it. It's easy to be principled if there's no money involved.
Yeah, basically. This go high, 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 this go high,